Welcome back to the Your Home Podcast, your monthly real estate industry check-in brought to you by O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house. I'm Adam Paikin, and as always, I'm joined by Stavros from O'Brien Real Estate. Stavros, hello.
G'day, Adam.
We've had some massive guests on the show, Shayna Blaze, Richo, Andrew Bogut, and I think today's guest takes the cake, right?
Yeah, oh, definitely. So today I'm very, very happy to introduce a good friend of mine, a colleague. We work together, a fellow real estate agent, but he also played for three football clubs. We only talk about one football club, and that's Richmond, of course. No, John Rombotis, he actually played for Fitzroy, Collingwood, mad Collingwood supporter, and he played for Richmond as well. Welcome, Johnny.
Stab, how are you? It's good to be here.
So, John, real estate agent at O'Brien Real Estate.
Yes, and enjoying it immensely, as you might know. Well, about 12 months ago to the day, I actually walked away from the game. So to be sitting here right now and having yourself so humble and having Darren Hutchins, who was the main instigator of me coming over. I think the main reason you lose your drive and your confidence sometimes. And I think coming off stage, as you know, Stav, in terms of the actual Alton brothers come over from overseas, and it was the second time I had the chance to be MC and the auctioneer, and I come off with a bit of confidence after that. And the boys said, "Why don't you come over to America?" And I said, "Well, I can't. I've got my son who's 15 and my daughter's 17. They said, "Well, you shouldn't leave the game." And then I come off stage, and then I saw Darren, as you know, Hutchins and yourself, and here we are 12 months later and enjoying it immensely.
You've really found the spark again and the love and the passion to get back into real estate. And the thing about you, John, is that you're just very, very humble, down to earth, and you're not only an ambassador for real estate, but you've helped so many people through the group, especially some of the younger ones. I see how you've helped people like Simone Gatt and Josh Runnatay and Luke and a lot of the team down at Keysborough. So it's a credit to you, mate. I've been really proud to see how you've done that.
Well, I appreciate that, Stephen. I think from a point of view from my end too, it's actually nice to be in a humble environment too. I think the brand itself, you know, the great news about if we can release it in the new office in South Melbourne, which is the HQ, which would be absolutely magnificent to be able to drive there on a regular basis and build our network. And as you know, Stav, my network's a strength in terms of my listing capacity. I think in terms of what we've got coming up in the next 2 months, it's exciting. But the fact that the brand can go all the way through Victoria, that's the exciting thing about O'Brien Real Estate.
Now, Adam, it's called Your Home Podcast. So I'd like to know about your home, you know, your childhood. Where did you grow up? Tell us about your home and what did it look like in the Rombotis home?
Yeah, well, I obviously had a father and mother who were obviously part of my life. And at a very young age, at 2 years of age, my father and mother separated or got divorced. And I had the pleasure of living with mum for a duration of time. At the age of about 16, she went through some mental health issues. And from there, I moved out of home at 17. I had obviously ambition to play league football, AFL football. And I was fortunate enough through the schooling of Corporal Grammar to be able to get drafted to the one and only Fitzroy Football Club at the time.
Fitzroy, yes.
And I was only 18 at the time. And I think I told you the story today, Stav. It's quite a remarkable story. I debuted at 18. But again, when I was 19, I was a mad, mad Collingwood supporter. And at Victoria Park from the age of 5 to 17, I was a member and lucky enough to be sitting in the members' wing. And the lady next to me was a parochial Collingwood supporter. And I was actually sitting there for 12 years straight. And then, as you know, getting drafted to Fitzroy.
So from 5 years old, you sat there?
Sat there for 17 years of age. And I got drafted. So I was a 17-year-old to play debut at 18 years of age for the Fitzroy Football Club. And remarkably, we're playing Collingwood at the last time at Victoria Park. It's Fitzroy amalgamated with Brisbane. And my two idols are Peter Dacos, which I watch every week, and Gavin Brown. First quarter come along, I come out, ran out to the ground, and Fitzroy colours come on first. The Fitzroy theme song come on first. And would you believe the Collingwood theme song come on, didn't that, Stav? Who started singing the Collingwood theme song? Me. Well, I'm in the Fitzroy colours. So we start our positions on the half-forward flank, and remarkably, my second idol, because Peter retired, was Gavin Brown. And my idol come and played on me. And then by pure coincidence, I looked to the members' wing, and there's that lady there who was sitting there for the last 12 years. Imagine what she was saying. There's that Johnny out there playing for the arch-rival Fitzroy. And kicked the first goal of the game, which is quite surprising. And it was a great experience to be out there playing against my beloved Collingwood.
So you sat there from the age of 5 next to this lady, and then you ended up playing the game. And you looked over and she was in the same spot.
She was in the same spot. I can imagine what she was saying. That's that young Johnny who was a mad Collingwood supporter all those years, screaming out Peter Dacos, which is my idol at the time, and Gavin being my second idol.
You were traded to Richmond only 1 year into a 3-year deal. How did all that come about?
Well, when you actually got expectations at Port Adelaide, actually Fitzroy amalgamated, and I didn't want to go to, at the time, Brisbane had 8 picks. But Matthew Primus and I had a good connection in the midfield, and he went as a priority pick to Port Adelaide. I was actually number one draft pick in the history of Port Adelaide Football Club, which is quite an achievement itself, and had a 3-year deal, Stav. But as we all do at a young age, got a bit too excited. And consequence of that, 1 year into the three-year term, Jack Cale was our coach, said, look, you haven't played at the level we thought. We're going to look like we're going to trade you. I said, I obviously want to go home as well. And it was either going to be Carlton or Richmond. I wanted to go to Carlton. But Richmond were the choice. And a bloke called Chris Naish, small forward.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at a forward portal at the time. And I went to Richmond as a midfield half forward. So that was the trade. And the rest is history.
Went to
Richmond instead of Carlton.
Take me back to round 22, 1999. I was at the game. It was Richmond versus Carlton. And just as the game was starting, Richmond had run out onto the field. You were playing that night. I didn't know you at the time.
Yes.
On the corner of the big screen, there was a little bit of a spark that started, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it went across the whole screen, and the screen at the MCG caught on fire while Richmond Football Club was out there training or warming up, and it was black smoke. You remember that game?
I certainly do, because I obviously got back in the senior side from injury. I was playing on Brett Ratton, and that 99 team, as you know, Carlton played in the grand final against North. So we had a lot of ability, and I was fortunate enough to be playing in the middle for a change, because obviously Matty Knights and those other players had more of a preference to go in there. And yeah, I thought, here we go. He's my luck. You know, here I'm thinking of showing I've got some ability playing in the midfield, and the scoreboard went on fire. So we went into the rooms, and the AFL said, look, if this keeps going, we can't get it out. It's going to be 2 points either side. That was going to be the verdict. And then, fortunate enough for me, the scoreboard was obviously stopped. The fire stopped, and then we came out and we had a remarkable win by about 10 points. We beat Carlton, who were obviously hot on favourites at the time.
At the age of 24, you suffered a bit of a setback, quite a serious injury. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was just, for me, round two, Danny Frawley was coach, who unfortunately the great man's passed away, which is still hard to believe. We played round two against the arch rival Essendon, who only lost one game for the whole 2000 season. We're playing in front of about 93,000 people. When you're playing in front of that many people, you can't hear anything. It's all instinct.
Mm.
And Dean Solomon, the nasty mongrel, if you don't mind me saying on this podcast, he come from an angle. We had a free kick. I didn't even realise. I had my arm down. He came at a violent rate, hit my shoulder, and all of a sudden the shoulder went out of the socket. Was up the top. And Jared Healy said on TV, it was the worst shoulder ever seen. So at the age of 24, the career was over, which is quite hard to take at the time. And back then it was half an hour delay on Channel 7. So I left the MCG room straight home, and I watched it. I haven't watched it ever again. And I saw the incident. So they cut the clavicle bone right off the bone.
Oof.
So to the day now, I haven't got that much movement, but I haven't got the bone's been cut off. That's why I could never play league footy again. But that was at the age of 24. And as we all do, we had surgery. And, you know, you go through that mental stage of your life. But I think it made me more resilient, because at 24, you start to have your peak. The debut at 18 years of age, so 6 years in the system. And then I was, what do I do next? That's what happened next. I didn't mean to get into real estate. It was more the adrenaline side of it. So I was doing a lot of auctions for charities and events. And I thought, well, this gives me the urge to excitement again, back on stage doing auctioning. So it's not football, but it's pretty close to it. So that's why I got the passion to being in real estate.
When was that, and who did you start with?
Back then I started with, Simon Lopez. Stuart Lopez was at Wilson Pride in Brighton, and I was living with Simon, his brother. And so I went to Wilson Pride, Tony Pride and Marcus Peters and Graham Wilson. I was still senior campaigns in the game, so I learnt from them. And the journey went from there. Been to a few clubs. So I haven't actually started my own company as well. But as I said to you, you get to a stage in your life where 12 months ago, I was leaving the game. And here I am right now in a wonderful place to be now, and got a great team with Luke and Maddie. Social media team's been great with the corporate office, having you, you know, in terms of that corporate entity too. And Darren, it's been a revelation, really, and I'm actually really enjoying it. I've got a passion for it again, very much so.
Tell us about your first deal, because I think we all remember our first. Well, big was the commission?
Well, it wasn't much, I know that, but this is what I say to Lukey, who, from my point of view, as you know, back in the old days, you get a binding, all the names that come through the office.
Yeah.
His name was Rob Watson. Go and ring all the people on the buyer inquiry. This is the portfolio you got. Go and sell. No training, nothing at all. And it was a little studio in Charnwood Grove. I remember it. I sold about $160,000, but that was my first deal. I had a great feeling about it. I met the client through buyer inquiry through the office. And, you know, Lukey, these days in our office, you've got the best systems in the house. You've got the best training. You've got Josh Fegan training. And, you know, we're dealing with bigger homes, as you know, Steve, you know, $2 or $3 million homes these days. So I think the older generation from ours realised how hard it was in the early days, and now it becomes a lot easier because you've got everything there for you to, not on a platter, but you haven't you, Steve? It's a lot easier, isn't it?
There's a lot more tech. There's a lot more apps that we can use. But I'll tell you something, John. I do miss the old days. And if you go back to when I started in real estate, you know, we used to put people in the car. We'd build a relationship. There was no realestate.com. We'd actually listen to what the buyer wanted, what their needs were, and we'd try and solve their problems. Where now a lot of them are seeing a property on the internet, they're scrolling through the photos, they're making a decision before they actually visit the property. And I think something that social has done has made us a little bit antisocial. So there was more relationship-based prospecting and business back in those days, opposed to the way we do things these days. So it was more relationship-based opposed to geographical-based. I talk to my kids all the time and say, you know, we'd get a checkbook and my kids don't know what a checkbook is.
Yeah.
And you try and explain it to them, they think it's an IOU. You know, you write out a check and then you take it to the bank. But it was very different back then. What advice would you give?
Well, I think the key niche in the game at the moment is that the relationship's already generated by the vendor. You've already got the trust for the vendor. So your constant communication every day bar Friday, Sun, unless there's an offer coming forward. So you've already got that respect from the vendor. I think the new generation got to realize you've got to get the trust in the buyer as well. You've got to get to know the buyer, where they live, what's their family, what the kids do, what's the generation, where they've been living over the period of the last 20 years. You've got to get that rapport with the buyer. So once you have that rapport with the buyer, then they'll come to the party and bid at auction. You got a connection with them because you've already got the connection with the vendor. That's the problem that I'm finding. I think that generation just think, you work with the vendor, you open it up and expect it to sell.
Do you feel like that underquoting is still happening at other agencies?
Well, it's hard to sometimes gauge prices, but I think as Steve said, with the technical side of it now, you can go on any app you can find, they say what the medium is, what the high and what the bottom is. Their comparable sales will give you that. You've got to give 3 months comparable sales. So I'll be absolutely mind blown how agents at the moment are still doing those ranges when it's quite clear. Like, how can you say, Steve, when you look at talk to your vendor and say, we're not quite sure what our reserve is now? Well, you sat down and under authority. You've outlined what the campaign, you've outlined the schedule. We know what it's practically worth despite emotion not being involved in it. So this is what we want to achieve. How can you then go to a buyer and say, quote, $200,000 less, and look at him in the eye and say, that's how you lose credibility and respect in the marketplace.
Yep.
If you actually say, I'd rather have less numbers through and generate it, and when it comes to auction day or it comes to execution, That John and the O'Brien's team, actually, when they say the reserve's 1-3, it's actually 1-3, not 1-5 comes out of nowhere. So, yeah, that's how I think we've got our respect and rapport.
Now, Johnny, you've got children of your own?
I have, and I'm very passionate about my kids. I know you are, Steve, and your daughter's a star. My daughter just graduated.
18?
18. My birthday, October 13, was the night she graduated the MCG. So what a birthday present that was. And my son, talk about lookalikes, looks exactly like me when I was 16.
Carbon copy.
It's incredible, isn't it? So he's got his aspirations to be a league footballer too, and he's at Caulfield Grammar. So, yeah, I'm a very proud father. We've got a long way to go, but he's got the tricks to... We'll see what happens in the next couple of years, Steph.
You've got Greek genes in you, and the Greeks like to buy property. What advice would you give your kids? And are you advising them to buy property, shares? What's their passport to wealth creation?
Well, obviously, savings are key, and I think you're right. I think we mentioned today in our call session, there's certain pockets and areas in Victoria where you can buy, and I think that's the key. So I think you've got to find the right niche and area. What do we talk about today? SEFA was 20 years.
Yeah, the average person lives in their home for about 20 years. Huntingdale, we worked out, was 27 years in turnover.
Where
a suburb like, say, Carrum Downs would be every 4 years, people would sell their home.
And St Kilda would be the same turnover too. But, yeah, those two areas we spoke about, 20 years and 27 respectively. So it just shows you what we picked the right area, we've just got to wait for the right time.
That's right.
We got told in training last week, the immigration levels at about, I think there's 556,000 people coming into Victoria next year.
Yeah, it's huge.
So, you know, you talk about that many coming in, and there's only a capacity of 153,000 to build in 1 year because of the government grants and building all the bridges and everything. So I'm going to go against the trend, and I'm going to go in the city because the yields are going to be very strong. I think the rent's gone up for 12% this year. Then they're going to catapult and go up again. So because everyone's going against the city now.
So when you say the city, are we talking units, apartments?
Apartments are right in the heart of the city because in terms of the COVID, which happened a couple of years ago, everyone's been working from home.
Yeah.
You'll find the trend will come back in the city again. Not straight away, it'll come back in. And then I think the city market is still a bit lean. I think there's some scope in the city. Yeah. Now you've got a place in South Bank yourself.
I do. My eyes have lit up.
Yeah, I saw that. I could be wrong, but I think you just logically, why would you? Regional's gone again now. It took off like a rocket. Everyone was outside, you know, down all the way down the pinch from down the other way. I think the city at the moment, you can find a nice little two-bedroom, not one, a two-bedroom. You might get parking, but that's the way I'd go in the city. Simmons Homes, remarkably from COVID, their costing for building homes have gone up about 26%. The custom-made builder, about 54%. You look at materials and the labour and the fact that cost of building a home right now, if you don't go through Simmons, not saying because Simmons, their products, they took over Porter Davis's loan too for $34 million, so they got all their staff from Porter Davis too. Yeah. So, yeah, you got to be careful where you go with because their costing has gone off the roof. Keep it safe. You've got an existing two-bedroom property in the city. You're going to get higher yields. Sit it on hold it for the next 10 years and try and get some capital growth that way. But, yeah, I think you might agree with me too, Steve. Look at Darren's home. You know, he's building over in Aspendale. That's gone off. The costing has gone off 50%.
Well, that's been the major problem with builders at the moment, and that is that they all signed fixed price contracts. From the moment they signed it to the moment they commenced, and by the time they finished the product, they got priced out. And a lot of builders have actually gone back to their customer, to the consumer, and said, look, this is the situation. And I think some of them that have described the situation, and many of the Porter Davis clients actually did say, if Porter Davis came to us earlier and said, look, it's going to cost an extra $50,000 and we can finish your home, they would have said yes. So I think there needs to be a partnership between the customer, the homeowner, and the builder, because what's happening right now is an anomaly. You know, we haven't ever seen this happen before. And it's just the cost of living has gone through the roof and it doesn't look like it's going to slow down anytime soon.
And that's why Simmons Homes, because they formed back in 1949 and they went on the stock market in 2014. They've got to provide a transparent spreadsheet. The owners of Simmons, including Gary, the founder, and Mark and Rhett, they put $25 million in last year. It was put in the spreadsheet. So they're going to catapult and they're going to be monopolised the whole market because they've got to be. Because everything's, they're obviously a sheet, their company.
You're taking me back through my early years of real estate. I used to work in Frankston in the mid-90s, Adam. And we had a suburb called Coringle, and that was pretty much the Jennings estate, the A.V. Jennings. And, yeah, you don't hear those names anymore, A.V. Jennings, Simmons. There was Metricon back then. I can't think of some of the builders there, but you're taking me back down memory lane.
Well, look at Mervac too. Like, you know, you talk about what they did in Port Melbourne and the Docklands. We had a full fortune to sell one, as you know, last year, the big one up Docklands. So Mervac aren't even doing as much. They're doing more outside as well.
This is probably crystal ball type stuff, but we're going to be subjected to a few more interest rate rises before they cool down. Perhaps mid to late 2024, we see the US Fed has already started reducing theirs. So would the advice be sort of hang on a little bit and save more of a deposit now and buy mid 2024? Or if you've got the serviceability, just get into the market, because when the interest rates inevitably do go down, the market potentially is going to go up like wildfire.
Well, if you don't mind me mentioning this, Steve, too, this is why I'm different in terms of a real estate agent. So I've really pushed hard for my vendors. I know we've got the Boxing Day launch, which we elaborate over our firm, but February's all been a wonderful time to sell. The spike's always been there in the last X amount of years. Everyone goes away, healthy, family, go back to Perth. They come back feeling absolutely magnificent, and they bid and they buy. It's the best time to sell is in February. So all my listings are coming. All of a sudden, I've got this big truckload coming through. It's because I believe the best time to sell is in February. And also late October is the second preference. So I've got a big spike coming through of listings. If you're going to sell, February would be first preference. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy something, you go when it's nice and cold in June and July.
My thoughts, quite simply, are I've never seen real estate go down. I started in 1991. We were selling properties for $25,000-$30,000. And I've never actually seen it go down. It might go down for a little bit. They just keep rising and rising and rising. Now, with the population growth that we've got happening here in Australia, especially in Melbourne, and why have we got that population growth? Because we're a nice, safe part of, you know, corner of the world. You know, we don't have a lot of the things that you see on the news every morning when you wake up and see what's going on in the Middle East or in the Ukraine. We don't have those things happening. We are in a very safe part of the world. We have an attraction destination. That's not going to finish and that's never going to stop. So I think supply and demand is what is the key to prices. Now, if there's last night being Tuesday night, I did an open house in Aspendale. The most people, it's a 4-week campaign that I've done. I've had about 9 people through the property. It's been my busiest open for inspection. Last night being a Tuesday night, the weather not too good. We had 12 groups of people on a Tuesday night at a property in Aspendale. So once I sell that property, what are the 11 other buyers going to do? Because that one's gone. I think at the moment, if you're thinking of buying or selling right now, it's no longer the spring market. Traditionally, we wouldn't sell in December. when now properties are still selling in December, January, right through. And Rombo's right. February has been always a spike, as has August for some reason.
Now, we've spoken a lot about, I guess, owner-occupiers purchasing properties, but I have the feeling, I guess, focusing on Victoria, we have a lot of investors that seem to be spooked. I'm going the opposite way, right? Yeah. You know, I run towards fire. I feel like now is probably a good time to buy if you are an investor. But what are your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more, because right now, while everyone else zigs, you need to zag.
Yep.
And the reason for that is a lot of investors are getting out of the market, whether it's because of the new taxes that are coming in for absentee owner tax, or, you know, short-term rental tax or land tax going up, or because of the safety checks that we've got to do and the minimum standards that are imposed on landlords. Now, landlords, I do think, need to have some minimum standards. So buy with your head, not your heart. Buy an investment-grade property that will get you the yield that meets all the safety checks, whether it's gas, electricity, and all those minimum standards, because there is a crisis out there. Now, if you look at the Mornington Peninsula, there was 2,000 homes on short-term rentals in years gone by. If you check it out right now for this year, there's 10,000 on the Mornington Peninsula.
Wow.
So that's 8,000 properties that have come off the permanent rental market that have gone to the short-term market. Now, they're not all, they haven't all come off the long-term market. Some people are on Airbnb are renting out their rooms or half of their house and things like that. But we need to encourage landlords to get back into the market. The government has to find a way where they incentivize it, not de-incentify, and that's why they're selling.
Where would be your hot suburbs in Victoria right now?
You've got to look at two things. Is it capital growth you're looking for, or yield?
Well, I think both.
Yeah.
You need both, right? You don't want to negatively gear too much.
There is a suburb that's actually got great yield and capital growth at the moment. Hastings is doing very well.
Yeah.
And I know it's not too far away from, you know, Melbourne itself. I love Seaford because it's coastal, it's on the beach. Carrum's already gone. Frankston's booming, and Seaford's sort of been missed a little bit. And when you're at Seaford, you are at the gateway to the Mornington Peninsula. You have fantastic, you know, freeway systems, whether it's the Morty extension, the Frankston Freeway, East Link, Peninsula Link, or if you want to stay off the freeway system, you go up and down and commute Nepean Highway. The new train stations that have been built right through from the Frankston line are second to none. I think Seaford's a good pocket to buy in because it's still affordable and you can actually add value to them because people have been there for 20, 30 years. I reckon it's right, but that's just one suburb for me. Johnny, what are your thoughts?
I think from a prestigious level, and I know it's in your neck of the woods too, I think going forward in the next 10 years, I think Edafale, you're looking at a top-end buying for an owner-occupier to buy. I know you said investment, but yep. I think from an owner-occupier perspective, I think Edafale's got some substantial growth based on it's got a nice little top pocket. If you're able to get a house there, I think you can't go wrong in the long term. I think it's got the Port Phillip Beach. It's 3 degrees colder than it is. And Edafale, Chelsea, Aspendale, their beach is like Gold Coast. But why would you want to go down and swim in the, which I'm an ex-iceberger myself, why would you want to go in the cold Port Phillip?
That's your polar bear.
Exactly, when you can go 3 degrees warmer down Aspendale and Edafale down there. So the great thing about COVID, what it's actually done is everyone used to always go back to the CBD. Now, what blows me away is if you go Brighton and you go Hampton, they're only 2Ks, but there's about $2 million difference. Mm. So, because you're close to the CBD. We're not even going to the CBD anymore. So Edafale, if you buy a prestigious home, 5-bedroom in Edafale to Brighton, maybe a 20-minute drive. You're right, that right, Steph? You're paying 5 times less. You got a home and a beautiful lifestyle and a community down at Edafale.
And a lot of potential capital growth as
exactly
well.
Exactly right. So that's my little throwaway.
What I love about Edafale at the moment, there's a little place on a corner of Berry and Munro, it was an old, you know, commercial building there, and they've opened the general store. So you can go and buy some, you know, produce for home, you know, but they've also got a cafe and an eatery there. All the funky cafes in that little pocket now, it's really just taken off. A lot of young families are buying in there, which is also really good too.
Can I just ask you one thing, Steve, because you've been in it since 1991. I just want to get your opinion. One thing I want to ask, I may have training last week, is that the lending capacity. So if 12 months ago, you borrow 1.1.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can only borrow 586,000. It's pretty much a 50% drop. So what's your thoughts on that? Because that's something that I'm finding staggering, how much of a loan capacity has dropped so significantly over the last 12 months.
You're getting graded differently now because of you know, the way the interest rates are going up, and there's got to be a buffer of 2% there. But you know what, John? back in 1991, interest rates were 17%, and it was a lot harder back then. And there was no CoreLogic, there was no, you know, online valuations and things like that. So I think it comes with the times. Yes, it's harder to borrow money. People are saving more. But last night when I did that open for inspection, one thing I did notice was there was a lot of mums and dads there with their children. You know, there was a newlywed couple. There was another couple that just got engaged. But they bring mum and dad. The bank of mum and dad are helping more these days than they were in the past. And they need to enter that market. But it is harder. Yeah, it is harder, but they're getting assistance and help.
And the apartment market and that investment market, you're slowing down in terms of the times on market, the apartment side?
Yeah, days on market are a little bit longer. We've had a few apartments recently, and we've done a little bit of a twist where we've done a one-pager where we had six apartments for sale. So rather than just stand at one apartment and promote and sell that one, I'd have the one in Mentone, in Collins Street, I'd have the one in Edithvale, I'd have the one in Chelsea, the one in Paterson Lakes. So I'd give buyers choice, and buyers that are buying apartments want to know two or three things. What's the body corporate? How many bedrooms? What level is it on? Has it got car parking or is it a stacker? So if you just put a couple of facts in there and have a one-pager, you can actually move your stock a lot quicker. So any agents out there struggling to sell apartments, have a one-pager, which if you can't sell the one that they meet you at, help sell the other one down the road that you're also selling. And that's actually helped me a lot. But before we go, Adam, I just want to say the best investment I ever made, the best piece of real estate that I ever bought was from this man, John Rombotis.
What is that? I feel a punchline here.
2017, Richmond had lost four in a row.
Yep. Yes,
we just lost to North Melbourne as well, which was just very, very bad. I ended up being at an event where John was selling and auctioning off Dustin Martin's football boot.
Wowee.
I ended up buying it for $350 in September when Richmond won the grand final. He was Norm Smith medalist, he was Brownlow medalist, and we'd won the premiership.
He's best and fairest winner too.
Yeah, best and fairest winner. I got offered $3,500. So that's 1,000% increase in capital growth on my footy boot. I didn't sell it, but thank you, John.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Go the Tigers.